Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Congress is just 10 days away from a July 1st deadline that could have an impact on millions of Americans.
That is the day interest rates on federal student loan debts are set to double.
Here in Massachusetts this month, there was another higher ed price increase. Trustees of the University of Massachusetts voted to raise fees by 4.9%. That brings the total cost of attending UMass next year to $12,481.
To which Governor Deval Patrick said recently, raising fees while not cutting costs, not cool.
I do believe that there is more work that the University of Massachusetts has to do systematically to review how to squeeze costs out and gain efficiencies and turn that more to the benefit of teaching and learning.
Touché, Governor, some might say. Why shouldn't UMass dig deep and find those efficiencies so that it doesn't have to pass cost increases into the pocketbooks and onto the backs of students?
Well, here's one reason why. According to UMass President Robert Corrett, writing in the Boston Globe last week, Corrett said, a decade ago, the state provided 61% of the funding for education programs at UMass. Students and their families paid 39%. Today, that ratio is practically nearly reversed.
In other words, students are paying more because the state is paying less. So President Corrett has parried with the governor and offered this challenge. He says if the state raises its contribution and commits to funding half of UMass's budget, the school, in turn, will freeze tuition and fees for 2 years. President Corrett joins us now in the studio. And President Corrett, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Well, thanks. Glad to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you here once again. Let me ask you, first of all, if indeed the state were to take you up on your offer and increase its contribution to the UMass budget to half, to 50%, how much are we actually talking about in dollar terms?
Well, when we talk about that piece of the budget, we're only talking about the educational piece, which is the piece that happens in the classroom. We're not talking about the research piece and the businesses like bookstores. So in that piece, it's about an $80 million change, which is a doable number and would get us back to 50-50 with the state on the education portion of the budget.
So if that were to happen, I mean, how long would that put UMass sort of in calmer waters when it comes to, it seems like, the ever-increasing budget crises that higher ed is going through?
Right. You know, I think we've been very good at trying to stay and keep our increases at inflation. Which I think is about the best you can do. You might be able to mitigate that a bit with more efficiencies, but you can only become so efficient, and we think we've become pretty efficient. I think it, you know, we promise for the 2 years, and then it depends on how inflation goes to some extent. What I've been saying to the legislature and to the governor, who I know want to support us, that 50-50 is a good target for today. It's an affordable target. It's not the target we had 5 or 10 years ago, but it's a reasonable target. And if they get to that 50-50, we will continue to try to find more and more efficiencies to keep the cost down.
I do wonder, though. I mean, I think that the idea of UMass, if indeed the 50-50 happened, of freezing increases in fees and tuition is very, very attractive to students and their families. Correct. On the other hand, doesn't that essentially make the added money that you receive from the state kind of a wash because the overall costs, nevertheless, are increasing?
You're right. I mean, that's why you have to look at the full picture. I mean, and that's why we can only promise to do it for 2 years because you just don't know what's coming down the road. We have all kinds of costs today that we didn't absorb 10 years ago. For example, we're building most of our own buildings. The state's not doing that. They're only producing maybe 20-30% of the dollars for buildings. We spend $158 million a year this on aid for students to help make our campuses more affordable because the state and the federal government can't keep pace with the aid needs. So we have our own challenges to deal with, and we're trying to do that in a way that mitigates the problem for the students as much as possible. But by the same token, you've got to maintain a certain level of quality or it's not worth operating the campus.
Mm. Well, Governor Deval Patrick has said that he's sort of in spirit supportive of the aims and the goals that you have. Essentially, he says everyone has those same goals, and that's creating a strong and viable long-term financial solution for the UMass system. But on the other hand, he hasn't said outright if he would commit to your offer. And in fact, we've got a little bit more of tape here from Governor Patrick sort of commenting on the whole regarding the financial situation that the UMass system finds itself in.
You know, it's my hope that before I leave office, we here in the State House can raise more revenue to better support all of public higher education. But I think the quid pro quo for that is to show the public that every element of waste, every dime has been wrenched out where it can be.
So there's Governor Patrick, President Corrett, saying, yes, he would eventually like to find those extra dollars for you, but in turn, he wants you to prove right. to the people of Massachusetts that you really are doing some serious belt tightening. I mean, how might you go about proving that?
Right. I think that that request from the governor is very reasonable. I mean, the state may not be giving us the amount of money I think they should be giving us, but they're giving us a lot of money, and they have the right to know that we're spending it wisely. What I try to do on the global level is to say it costs UMass to educate a student, this is our expenditures now as opposed to revenues, cost us about $20,000 to $21,000 a year to educate a student. That's about half of what a private university of our size would be spending. That, just in a nutshell, tells you we're pretty efficient. I mean, if we're doing what we do at the quality we do it, with the rankings we're able to achieve at half the price of a private, we're doing something right. And the other thing I point to is if you look at our actual cost and inflation-adjusted dollars, we're spending 22% fewer dollars today to educate a student than we did 10 years ago. And that student is coming out with a higher quality education. So those are two global pieces of data that I use. But the last thing we're going to do, and we do this already, but we're going to do it in a much more formal way, is we're going to put together a budget spreadsheet that shows exactly what we're doing step by step, line by line, aggregated category by aggregated category, where we've made our cuts and how we've become more efficient. And we're looking at ways that we can become more efficient day to day.
And when is that going to be made available?
We will have that ready for the fall. Okay. As I begin my sort of fall speeches at Chambers of Commerce, et cetera, we will have that available. We've promised my board that we will carry the message about efficiencies across the state so that people stop asking, you know, how are you doing this? Why are you more efficient? Can you prove you're more efficient? We're going to show that we are.
Okay, this is interesting because one last question on this efficiency front, because I was doing some research over the course of the day in terms of how other public institutions, higher ed institutions across the country, who are all, everyone's pretty much in the same boat regarding the steep decline in state funding over the past two decades, you know, sort of how they've approached the whole efficiency question. And just one example, which I'm sure you're familiar with since you've been in the system for some time, the University of Michigan has pretty minimal financial connections to the state of Michigan, and ultimately it meant an overall loss of $100 million in state appropriations since 2002. But on the other hand, Michigan, you know, has trimmed its annual spending, it says, by $135 million over the past 7 years by doing things like closing storage facilities mm-hmm. for food and supplies that are used on campus. They use vendors who just deliver it daily now. They've created its own insurance company, improved energy efficiency, etc. So it sounds like, I mean, this might sound like nickel and diming, but is that, are those the ideas that UMass is also open to?
Well, what we've done, is, as you suggest, is what most campuses have done. We've looked at the administrative side, which is the easiest one to work with because you can get your arms around it. So we've done things like co-purchasing of paper, which can save us millions of dollars a year, co-purchasing of energy, putting more and more online so that you're doing less paperwork with fewer people, and more is being done through technology. Looking at all kinds of efficiencies related to purchasing. We're redoing our entire purchasing structure so that it'll run much like an Amazon.com, one click, everything online, low-cost vendors there where you can see them and they can compete with each other. And we can prove that we have saved millions, if not tens of millions of dollars through these efficiencies already, and we have hundreds of millions on the horizon that will come from that. More importantly, I'm launching a whole series of academic efficiency efforts. And I'll just give you a sort of a simple example. If your average graduation rate at most public universities today is 5.6 years instead of 4 years mm-hmm. when I was in school, and you can just get it back to 5 years, just drop it by a half a year, you can save hundreds of millions of dollars because every time a student goes to school, they're getting subsidized. They're getting subsidized by the state. They're getting subsidized by the federal government, and they're paying also their own tuition. So if you can just save, we have 70,000 students, and you can graduate them in a half a year less time, you can save hundreds of millions of dollars for both the student and the state by doing that. And we're working hard to begin to implement more and more of those kind of efforts.
We're speaking with President Robert Corrett. He is the president of the University of Massachusetts. Listeners, what's your question for him? Should the state fund a larger portion of the UMass budget, or, as we've been speaking, should UMass tighten its own belt even further? States across the country are all cutting their contributions to their higher education, so maybe we should think out of the box here. Is there another way to fix the higher ed funding crisis? Again, what is your question for President Robert Caret? And overall, what is at stake if we can't fix budgets when it comes to public higher ed? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. President Caret, on that point, I just would love to hear from you. Let's take a step back. What is at stake if, for example, the state doesn't take you up on the offer and we get to that 50-50 funding?
Well, what's happened is we're all becoming more private-like. A private institution is 70% tuition-driven. We've been 70% state-supported. The more you push us to be tuition-driven, the more we become like a private institution. If you become a private institution, you take more and more out-of-state students because they're willing to pay more money to come. If you're a private institution, you probably become smaller because you have to take a certain proportion of students that can pay the full amount and subsidize a smaller percentage that can't come on their own. You're paying for more aid on your own. You're building all your own buildings. So basically what happens is some of us survive in the private mode and some of us don't. Just like the privates, some of them can survive and some don't. But the bottom line is the citizens of this country, they don't have affordable, high-quality public education anymore.
Well, let me ask you something on that front. Some might say, okay, there's a chain of causality here, that the federal government is giving less money or funding state initiatives at a lower rate every year. The state, therefore, is tightening its budgets, and that's causing schools like UMass to then pass on the additional costs to students. So why not break the chain entirely and actually relieve yourself of your obligations to the state and truly go private? Would that open UMass up to the possibility of raising funds in all sorts of new ways that you can't as a publicly chartered institution?
Yeah, it can, but you can't do it at the size we are. And that's the problem, because if we were to decrease our size by 50%, you have 35,000 students looking to go somewhere else. If those public state universities are also being privatized, they're shrinking. Community colleges are already, in most cases, oversubscribed. So where do these young people go to school? So, you know, Jefferson believed that this country, and most of the founding fathers believed this country, in order to have a strong democracy, you needed to have a strong educational system. I think we need to reevaluate if that's still true or not. If it's not true, we can figure out a different way of doing business, but society is going to suffer in the long run, I believe.
Let's take a call. We're speaking with President Robert Caret. He is the president of the University of Massachusetts. UMass did increase its fees by 4.9% for the next academic year. And if you're a UMass student, we'd love to hear what you think about that at 800-423-8255. Michaela's calling from Quincy. You're on the air, Michaela.
Hi. My question is there any option for a dedicated revenue source, such as the casinos that are going in across Massachusetts, to be diverted specifically for higher education purposes? And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, actually, the legislation that created and allowed for the casino systems does have language in it that provides a certain amount of the funding towards higher education. UMass is part of that. So if the casinos are successful and there are profits that come out of them, there will be some dollars that come from the casinos to the universities, and not just University of Massachusetts, but public higher education in general.
Mm. President Caret, some people might stand back and think, okay, yes, absolutely. There's sort of higher ed is a public good. I mean, you've spoken in the past a great deal about basically if you were truly to quantify the effect that UMass has on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, it's pretty huge given the not only the number of students you educate, but, you know, basically the jobs that then they go on to take, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, on that front, it just makes me wonder if, you know, you were predicting a future where we're educating fewer folks because you can't stay as big. Is it as dire as that, really?
I think so. I mean, if you look at the privates as opposed to the publics and look at the cost there today, you know, the average cost is high 30s to high 50s. I think you see us, if we all move in that direction, a lot of people are going to be left out. At UMass today, we have students graduating 14,000 of them a year with an average debt of $25,000. That's a 50% increase in the last few years. They're not taking on that debt just for the heck of it. They're taking on that debt because they need to. And as you know, the student debt across this country is almost $1 trillion, something that didn't even exist when I was in school. There's something wrong, I believe, with that paradigm. And I just don't I don't want to be in a position to have to support that approach. I'm pleased here, actually, that the governor and the legislature actually would like to put more money back into higher education. It's just a matter of revenue at this point. We are only now about 2.9% of the state budget. We used to be about 4.7% of the state budget. We used to, in terms of our overall budget, we were funded at about, at the education piece, at about 63 to 65%, as you suggest. We'll be at 43%. And we're 48th in the nation in terms of state funding for public higher education based on per capita income.
Well, let me jump in there on that, because that would actually raise a really curious or interesting question in my mind. That, do you find that UMass, by virtue of being in Massachusetts, maybe between a rock and a hard place? I mean, you were just sort of talking about how vis-a-vis per capita income, you don't get all relatively that much funding from, say, wealthy individuals in Massachusetts who might be more attracted to having their name on a building at one of our, you know, very esteemed private institutions here.
Right.
I mean, do you feel that way? Do you think UMass needs some sort of more powerful, wealthy, you know, lobbyists or evangelists on your behalf?
Well, we can always use that, and I would welcome that. But we have quite a few of them also on our side. And, you know, I have a great relationship with the private universities for the last 40 years in three states. We complement each other. We each serve different clientels. We serve complementary needs. And you really thrive as a nation because we have such a complex and multifaceted higher ed system. So I think there's plenty of room for all of us. But in order to provide the kind of access we need for our population, for those that are qualified to go, we need to provide a variety of avenues, and public higher education is a critical piece of that.
We've got a bunch of people who'd like to speak with you, so I'm going to try and squeeze as many as I can in the next few minutes. Paul is calling from Salem. You're on the air, Paul.
Thanks very much. I'm a proud graduate of Amherst, University of Massachusetts, and all I can say is after years of service to the university and the state system is that we are the most underappreciated system in the country. That at $20,000 a year, a world-class education in Amherst is unbelievable. Instead of going to George Washington for $55,000 or Brown, as my son did, one of my children, it is ridiculous. But there's something going on here because we're surrounded by the privates and the Ivies for so years and all their tradition. I think we should have been founded in Concord, where we initially were thought of being open in Amherst, but instead went to Amherst. But if the London Times ranks us at number 37 in one category and number 64 in another category in the world, where is the appreciation of the Massachusetts taxpayer? Why aren't we willing to underwrite more to give our children the finest, most affordable education in the world? I don't understand why there's reluctance of the state and private, our taxpayers, not to support this university system a great deal more, because in education it's all about one word, the value. What do you get for your buck?
Paul, thank you so much for your call. Mm-hmm. President Corrett.
Well, I agree. I think public institutions in many cases have been underappreciated. We've been just taken for granted for a long time, and that just can't continue. We're getting, at Amherst this year, his alma mater, we're getting 37,000 applicants for 4,500 slots. There's huge demand on all five of our campuses. Our campuses are all ranked at very high levels in different rankings, depending on the kind of ranking you're looking for. We're very, very proud of what we've been able to achieve. We find actually in the business and governmental community a lot of respect for us. It just hasn't shown itself on the funding side as much as we believe it's necessary. And we're not out here just begging for money, just because we can beg for money. We're just trying to come up with a balance that makes sense. That's why the 50-50 model, I think, makes sense. We're not asking for 70-30 again as it was when I was in school, or 65-45 as it was in 2009. We're asking for 50-50 on a very small piece of our budget. Our budget is a $3 billion budget. We're talking about one-third of that, basically. We've become very, very entrepreneurial in terms of the other pieces of our budget, in terms of generating our own revenues.
Let's take another call. Josh is calling from Chelmsford. You're on the air, Josh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was looking, hopefully, for the president to comment about the issue between what employers are saying is a lack of qualified candidates and graduates saying that they can't find jobs. And if the president thought that the model that's been put forth by, for example, the Arizona State system, where they're trying to work much more closely with future employers so that graduates are able to find that work out of school, because, you know, the debt issue that is constantly raised, you know, students having high debts, of course, isn't nearly as much of a concern if a student graduates and near after has that high-paying job and they can pay the debts. It's only when they graduate with those high debts and then it takes them a while, if ever, to find that gainful employment.
Josh, thank you so much for your call. President Correa?
Yeah, again, very, very good points. And we are working much more aggressively with business and government and trying to entice students into the pipelines where there are open jobs. Cybersecurity, for example, IT in general, any of the new technologies, many of the big companies will tell you they have hundreds of openings, but they don't have the qualified candidates coming out in those fields. So we're working with national organizations like the Business Higher Education Forum and local organizations like the Massachusetts Business Roundtable and the Chamber of Commerce here in Boston, the Massachusetts Competitive Partnership, working with all these organizations, including government, the new task force that I was just on for the state that the governor appointed on economic development going forward, trying to align majors more with the needs out there. One way to do that, and it's worked when I was in school during the Sputnik era, because I'm a chemist, was to provide forgivable loans. If you take a student and you want them to go into engineering or you want them to go into biotechnology, and they're not inclined to do that, but if you give them a forgivable loan, you can entice them over there. And if they have the skill set, they can become very successful. So we're trying to match that up better and better, and we're trying to use internships also to match those things up better and better.
President Correa, we've only got about a minute to go here, but I do want to sort of circle back to your challenge to the state, the 50-50 funding challenge, which, as you were saying, amounts to about $80 million. Governor Patrick hasn't said either way what he thinks yet at the moment about that. But I'm imagining there are legislators on Beacon Hill who are saying, who are thinking to themselves, no way. Not because they don't want to, but because there's just no room in the budget. I mean, they're looking at increasing pension and health care costs. They're looking at, slashes in federal funding to the state. They're looking at having to bail out the MBTA. That even if they wanted to, the state just doesn't have the wiggle room to do it.
Right. No, I understand that point of view. You didn't mention transportation, but that's another big one. But let me tell you what we've done with public policy, just as an example. We spent more on prisons this year than we did on the University of Massachusetts. I'm not sure as a society we want to be in that position. Education is a lot cheaper than putting people in prisons. I know the state would like to do more. What I'm going to do, and I promised them this at my last board meeting, is to give them specific examples of what will happen if we don't get more. Because we understand that if they can't get there, we need to figure out a better way to do business. But the business will be different. And we will explain what the downsides are so that we all know what we're getting into if the support's not there.
Robert Correa is the president of the University of Massachusetts. President Correa, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, continue this conversation online. Let us know what you think about that 4.9% fee increase and your thoughts about the future of higher ed in Massachusetts at radioboston.org. Coming up, folk rocker Ellis Paul and his new album for kids. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.